Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 17th of January. Very nice to have you with us. We have our panel today assembled, a wonderful panel, and I'm going to introduce them to you. Before we do that, I just want to remind you that you can get in on the conversation, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Mike Spain is back from vacation. He is looking well rested.
Hi, Mikey.
Hi, everybody. Relaxed. I'm all rested.
Did you have a good time?
Fantastic.
Mikey liked it.
You were in Aruba.
Where are you heading?
That's right, in a month. But I. But good for you. And so it's wonderful to have you back. Mm-hmm. And we'll.
It's great to be here where the temperature is in the 20s.
Okay, I don't believe you at all, but it's wonderful. Mike is the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. Rosemary Armeo is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, and it's a pleasure to have her.
It's a delight to be here.
She has not been on vacation, but she
And she, therefore, is not mellow.
No, I'm not mellow.
No, she's ready to go.
She's dressed in yellow.
Ready to go. And mellow yellow, right. And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. I'm a little bit nervous. My fingernails are leaving my hands because I truly, no, forget about the fooling around. I'm truly worried about making this $500,000 in a lockbox.
Do you have a new total in front of you?
Yeah, it's $298,732. That's what it is. Comes right off the tip of my tongue. And that's what it is. Look, we haven't got the money from the long weekend, so probably we'll be over into the 300,000s, but that leaves us about $200,000 to go. Now, let me just say that during the fund drive, Joe, as you know all too well, we can raise in excess of $100,000 a day in the fund drive. So this we could really do this if everybody just puts their mind to it. Now, we've gotten a little help from the Breitbart people, who have said that that the first thing that should happen is that the and the Breitbart people are not dangerous in themselves, except that their representative is sitting right there in the White House, within touching distance of the president. And their position is the very first thing that should happen is that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting should be defunded. Well, we have to assume that they know what they're talking about, that it makes sense because Trump has objections to the liberal bubble as we know it. In other words, anybody who graduated from college and all the rest of that. And therefore, I do think that this is going to be a very difficult time, and that we may have to start figuring on doing without the money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is $400,000 out of our $700,000 budget. And this is very worrisome because that's a lot of jobs, people who you hear on the radio all the time and everybody else. So I'm just asking if you believe what I'm saying to you, and I hope you do, and knowing that this panel exists and that you like it, you'll go to the WAMC.org and put some money in a lockbox as much as you possibly can, or as little as you can do afford to do.
1-800-323-9262 is how you can do it. On the phone line, however, WAMC.org is set up for you to take pledges as well, WAMC.org. February 6th starts the fund drive, and we need to make more than half, much more than half, hopefully by that day. But it would be nice, we could do it by the inauguration.
Yeah, we could. It would be great. And
it would send a signal.
It would send a message.
Yeah, I like that.
A message to Garcia. If anybody's ever been in the Boy Scouts, you'll know what I'm talking about.
All right, let's go to the panel and to what we want to talk about today, the topics. The headline of the New York Times article is, "As Trump Era Arrives, a Sense of Uncertainty Grips the World." I just want to read the first two paragraphs of this article. "The Germans are angry. The Chinese are downright furious. Leaders of NATO are nervous, while their counterparts of the European Union are alarmed. Just days before he has sworn into office, President-elect Donald Trump has again focused his penchant for unpredictable disruption on the rest of the world. His remarks in a string of discursive and sometimes contradictory interviews have escalated tensions with China, while also infuriating allies and institutions critical to America's leadership, traditional leadership of the West. No one knows where exactly he is headed, except that the one country he is not criticizing is Russia and its president, Vladimir Putin. For now, And that he is an enthusiastic cheerleader of Brexit and an unaffiliated Britain for now.
Wow.
Wow, that calls for a follow-up.
Well, it's interesting. We now know that Britain is going to go for a hard Brexit. No kind of semblance of the old world order in a different modified form is just going to be out, and Britain is going to negotiate with everyone in the world. They want a deal sort of like Canada has with the European market. They're free to go off on their own. They get kind of favored friend status from the EU, which makes sense because they are a large market for many of the members of the EU. But that means open to China, open to Brazil, open to the United States. And, of course, that's what Trump wants for the United States. I think what this is leading to is a full-out trade war, the end of globalization. That seems to be very popular right now. And who that will help the most is China, which has the biggest market of all. It's pressing to increase its influence around the world. And the United States is not leading anymore. So China has a great opportunity here.
You mean by the U.S. boxing themselves in and not being part of globalization, it just gives China a chance to rush in and take up what they don't already have?
Of course. In fact, yeah. Trump is cheering on Brexit. He said he's going to pull out of the TPP, doesn't like NAFTA. So all the trade agreements in place, he wants to undo, or I guess he says renegotiate. Mm-hmm. So China's saying, sure, bring it on.
Yeah. Well, there's another thing here, Rosemary. I want to get your take on this. This is a guy who has succeeded, he says, because we don't really know how much he has or how much, you know, we haven't seen his tax returns, the rest of it. But this is a guy who has succeeded by the art of the deal, name of his book. He likes to deal. He likes to negotiate. He likes to say, I can get a better deal than Obama got, you know, on that. So is it possible that he's just a prisoner of his own deal making, as opposed to a philosophy? I mean, President of the United States, and I think Obama was there, could consider what's good for the United States, but also consider what's good for the rest of the world. I don't think that's in his lexicon. I don't think that's in his understanding that I have to watch out for the rest of the world. I think his understanding is
America first.
Yeah, America first. Make America great again, as if we aren't, you know, one of the top economies, if not the top economy in the world. And I think that that's what this is about.
Well, he wanted to be disruptive, and he's coming in just as he was during the campaign, saying things that are perhaps hyperbole. They could be inflammatory. It looks like we're criticizing the countries that have been our best allies, like Germany, and we're actually saying nice things about Putin. And all of that has everybody on edge. But I think Angela Merkel has said it best. We've heard these things before. Let's just see how things really happen. I think she understands, and she's pretty low key, and that's one of her great traits, that let's just see how it plays out. I do agree that it's the art of the deal. I think this is all part of the hype that you have before you actually sit down and negotiate. Hopefully he'll make that. Everybody has been waiting for
it. Not the pivot again. Don't do that.
Not the what?
Don't mention a pivot. He is not changing.
Well, no, I don't think.
Hopefully he'll make somewhat of a pivot after Friday when he actually takes the oath of office, at least briefly. He'll probably read from a teleprompter when he gives his inaugural address, and it will probably say a lot of the right things, you know, that won't be so divisive but be more unifying, and then we'll see what happens.
Meanwhile, Premier Xi of China gave a speech in Davos, Switzerland today, where the big conference is going on, and he sounded like a U.S. president. He talked about the need for global cooperation to solve income inequality, which is horrifying. There's a new Oxfam report out about how bad the inequality is.
Like a handful of people own
more than half the rest of the world.
Right. Yeah.
And Xi is saying, globalization is not the big enemy of everything here. Yes, it has caused terrible dislocations and problems, but you're not going to solve them by going back to this protectionism, little kind of protective coat that all countries, United States and Britain, we're seeing, are putting themselves into.
But when you look at Angela Merkel, You get the feeling, though, that she's exactly what I was talking about. She does think in larger global perspective, right, Rosemary?
Yes, she does.
Than does. You know, look, Germany had a terrible history. She's aware of it, and she's persistently basically making the case to her people that we never want to be where we were once, and that we're better than that, and that the world can be a better place. And for that, she may get beaten in the next election.
Right.
So because for the same reason that Hillary Clinton got beaten in this election.
Right.
And the reason that Brexit won.
Right, right. I want to just thank our very good friend Julius, who called in. He calls a lot, or wrote in and called. He said, when I was talking about the lockbox, I had said 400,000 out of 700,000. No, it's 400,000 out of 7 million, which is our budget. Thank you, Julius.
One of the things I just wanted to clarify, the remarks of Angela Merkel, of what she was, of what Trump said yesterday. And in the article that I was reading from in the New York Times, basically saying that that there's uncertainty is gripping the world and we're all in for it. He said that Angela Merkel had made a catastrophic mistake in allowing refugees to pour into Europe. And Mr. Trump described the European Union as basically a vehicle for Germany and predicted that the bloc would probably see other countries follow Britain's example and vote to leave. And that is what is causing such disruption and concern throughout Europe. Meanwhile, obviously, there is great unpredictability in the president-elect and great uncertainty as to what this means for us as well. And one of the other issues that I wanted to get into is looking at his comments yesterday on insurance and health care. And Donald Trump vowed that insurance for everybody was the term that he used. I think we mentioned this briefly yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he has a goal of insurance for everybody while also vowing to force drug companies to negotiate directly with the government on prices in Medicare and Medicaid. He was asked for specifics, and he declined in an interview with the Washington Post. But any proposals from the incoming president will almost certainly dominate the Republican effort to overhaul federal health policy as he prepares to work with his party's congressional majorities.
Well, wait. Isn't that the same Republican Party who didn't want to allow negotiating with the drug companies to Barack Obama? And so now he's saying you better go along with this, and it was something that should have been done then, and it's something that should be done now. I mean, it's crazy that Medicare and Medicaid and others can't negotiate with the government in terms of the quote art of the deal.
I believe Trump is now advocating for socialized medicine. I think it's great. Let's do it. I would change my opinion if it goes through. Yeah. How he's going to get this through Republican majorities in both House would also take masterful legislative work.
Could be, but when he takes, but Rosemary, just because I want to get you on record here, you're saying you would, if he does it, you would change your
If he brings in universal health care,
single payer.
Okay. He says I'm not in favor of single payer.
Yeah, okay.
But what he is describing, it's
that.
Medicaid. It's
okay.
Medicare for everybody.
And
so
I
would make
okay. Fair
no,
enough.
my Democratic heroes, including Hillary
sure.
Clinton, could not make that happen.
Yep.
If Trump makes that happen, yes, I would have to rechange my feelings and description of it.
And
him.
If he takes a woman's right to an abortion away from her,
you know what? You know what? He cannot do that. And I don't think
he can do it indeed.
No, I don't think he can. And
by
here's,
attacking the Supreme
yes,
Court and having another
yes.
case.
And then
court.
We just go underground like we did for up to the time in the
well, I wouldn't say just.
No, and we've had this fight
but here's,
before.
Here's one other thing, too. The statistics out today show that the abortion rate is at the lowest level.
Yes.
It has been since Roe v. Wade. Abortion is not a major concern to most women actually having it done. What we really need is universal access to affordable contraception. That's the real issue.
But if somebody needs an abortion, and often that is somebody who is poor and can't afford one,
right,
and has to resort to some terrible, terrible things in order to get that done, are you saying that's okay?
Because no, of course not. Don't, as Alan says, don't put words in my mouth.
I would venture to say that you're in disbelief that Trump will pass this universal health care.
Like I said, I think
about.
It would be a feat. It would be a feat that Democrats have been trying to do since the 90s. So, of course, I would be in favor of it. And abortion, yes, I think he's wrong, totally wrong about abortion. I think there should be absolute freedom of choice for women. But I would not say, okay, well, I'm not going to like your universal health care because you're wrong on abortion.
No, but that's not what you said. See, I'm all with you, Rosemary, as always. But there was that but there was that moment that you said, I would be for him if he did this. As
her opinion would change of him.
Yes,
I don't think that gave
correct.
Gave everything that
what,
he stood
are you a
for
lawyer?
His endorsement. Yeah. I'm a lawyer. Yeah.
I love having you know, people debating what I said.
I heard what she said. Her opinion would change of him. It doesn't mean she'd buy into everything.
Correct. I still wouldn't buy into a whole lot of what he does. Like taking orders from Russia is kind of gives me
the
concern
part about
too.
Dealing with the pharmaceutical companies. That was an obstacle. That really made Obamacare, you know, unable to produce the results that President
and
Obama
he knows
had intended.
It.
And
right,
whose
right.
idea was that? That
and if he's able to negotiate with the drug companies and fight the billion-dollar lobby that it is, and get the people, the Republicans who and the Democrats in Congress who are well-funded by the pharmaceutical companies, and they have enormous influence, and somehow blow that apart and be able to have the government negotiate with the drug companies the way they do, like in Canada. That's why drugs are so much cheaper in Canada.
Now, you know, Mike, we've been told, and this is interesting, that the leaders of both the Republican leaders of both houses will stand next to Trump when he proposes his health care reform.
Yeah, I want to see that. I really want to see that. I want to hear what they say while he's saying one thing and they're saying another thing. I mean, this is what's going on. We're hearing double
speech.
Well,
everybody has basically a sentence with no details behind it.
And that's right.
So that's all we're dealing with.
It's going to be better. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be open to everyone.
It's going to be magic.
And then what do you do?
No one's going to die.
The funny thing
America.
Is, if you did that... Over a relatively short period of time, the cost of health care would be controlled, and it would be better. But
it's a great system. I don't know how he's going to do it. Nobody's been able to do it for decades.
I think his political capital is on the wane anyway. If you look at the public opinion surveys, I mean, he's going into office with so little to campaign. I mean,
you
Obama
know, Mike, what have you got to lose?
Right.
Well, before we all count on the fact that Donald Trump is going to give us universal health care of any kind, anything
seconds.
Like it, yeah, just think again.
All right, we're going to take a break there. We will be back in just a moment and go to some letters and other topics. We welcome your thoughts, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the group this morning, and we will continue our conversation after this break. Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. As I mentioned, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the group this morning. Panel at WAMC.org for you to share your thoughts this morning. Alan, did you have a few letters, I thought?
We do, and thanks. And I'm reading one off the device
here. Oh, great.
Here.
Well, here's another one. There, yeah, look at that.
Thanks very much. And E says, E writes every once in a while, it is becoming clear that Trump has been making a deal with the devil, in other words, Putin. You help me get elected, and when I'm president, I will lift sanctions and we will make the biggest deal ever. Secretary of State being ExxonMobil CAO will negotiate the details. What you say, Vlad? It'll be terrific. Beyond the pale? I wonder. Okay, and then Daisy says, panel, you are giving him way too much credit. He's a man with some kind of narcissistic personality disorder. He doesn't have a plan. He wants to be the most popular guy in the room. And the more that doesn't happen, the angrier and more destructive he will get. And that's from Daisy. Did we say we're giving him too much credit and that he has a plan?
We said that if the plan that he has spoken to the Washington Post about actually is really a plan and he's able to implement it, that would please us.
You know what I love about this guy? Not, But what I really think is so, what I think is so interesting is he can scream at them and he can talk about the corrupt press and the rest of it, and he has no compunctions whatsoever about picking up the phone when it's good for him and talking to the Washington Post.
Right.
It's amazing. Just amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Christopher says, the idea that Trump will somehow change from the person we've known for years into a stable, competent person is nothing more than a wish. As the old Freudian saying.
I think
saying,
the signs are there that Christopher is right.
The old Freudian saying, the fear is the wish.
Well, you know, the night that he surprisingly won the election, which I think was more of a surprise to him than everybody, he seemed humbled. Maybe he'll be humbled by the events Friday and at least get a different perspective that might guide him for a little while before, you know, the rest of him returns.
Interesting, Mike. I didn't think he seemed humbled, but then that's just a matter of perception.
It was momentary, but it was...
Mary. I thought he seemed scared. I don't know about
maybe
humbled.
Maybe he was just a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, kind of.
Mary said, Trump is well known for telling people what they want to hear. Is this just another example of that? And Andy says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Trump is not advocating universal health care. He's advocating insurance for everybody. The insurance industry will have regulations reduced, and the free market will solve the problem by increasing deductibles, reducing coverage, and increasing premiums.
He says smaller deductibles, better coverage, everybody's covered.
Yeah. What you talked about and what the writer talks about is what the Republicans have been pushing, which is very different from what Obama said. But it's true. I mean, by raising the deductibles, you can offer insurance to everybody. And a lot of people who are of lower income brackets, who have families and other hardships, will not buy insurance. And they won't get any, well clinic care. And they'll just go to the emergency room. Right. And that's how they'll get their health care.
It's called universal access to insurance, which is different than universal coverage.
Well, we have a universal access to insurance. We always have had it.
All you need is money.
That's what we would be going back to.
Enough money, you don't need health insurance.
And then the other thing that is overlooked, and I guess I didn't quite realize it, was at the end of Obamacare, the end of ACA, means this huge, basically, a supplement, a payback to the super rich who had been taxed
subsidizing
to cover it. Who had subsidized it. Mm. So it's one more way that those ultra-rich are getting such a break in new administration voted in by working people.
It's going to hit New York State because New York State is going to cover Medicaid after Obamacare starts backing out. And it's going to hit our budget, which comes out today and obviously is going to make things quite constricted for things like school aid and roads and other things.
I don't see the end to the millionaires' tax in this new budget coming
out. No, I don't
either. I do not see how that can happen.
And just a little deviation here, and that is that your paper and others, Times and others, have said, now Andrew Cuomo, who's come up with some wonderful ideas, has to figure out how to pay for them.
Right.
And you've got to get that legislature to go along with them.
Right.
And it may well be that this is a trap for the legislature. In other words, I'm going to give you, you know, free college education if you're making less than $125,000. No, you're not, says allegedly will say the Senate. Oh, yeah? Okay, then that's on you. Interesting ploy. Dear panel, Donald Trump's statement for health care for all is a distraction effort. The GOP is taking more heat than they expected for their efforts to repeal the ACA. There's no draft of a bill or any groundwork for health care for all. Donald Trump says that it's only weeks away from happening. It took over a year for the ACA, and that covered 30 million additional people. He's just distracting people from the Russian interference, racist comments that he made on Twitter, and the GOP efforts to repeal the ACA. And that's from Keith. Today, Joe, you mentioned it yesterday. I'll mention it again. Congressman John Faso, who I like very much and who I don't always agree with, is going to be on our air. He's going to be on
the first time as a congressman?
No, well, for the first time as a congressman. And he'll be coming in, and then he'll be answering questions on the in a civil discourse. May I emphasize civil? For the Vox Pop today at 1 o'clock. And anybody who's not civil, bye. Okay, so bye. I know how to hang up a phone, as we all know. Corey, John says, okay, if we are not to take what he says literally, what it will mean when he speaks, what will it mean when he speaks the oath of office on Friday? That's interesting. Yeah, okay. And Lee says, during the 8 years that George W. Bush was leader of the free world, it was no doubt a case of the emperor's new clothes, and nobody close to him ever pointed out that he mispronounced nuclear. But in just a few months, the president-elect has made some perfectly ordinary phrases, a beautiful thing, a terrific deal, it's huge, suddenly into oxymorons. Wasn't he preceded by it's huge by the guy who sells cars on the television?
Yeah, Billy Fusillo?
Yes.
Yeah. By that guy.
There was a copyright infringement case, I know.
I saw a whole article on this, and I don't believe it was in the Times Union, so rest easy, Mike. But I believe it was the difference between Y-U-G-E and H-U-U-U-G-E.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
See, that's the difference.
Yeah.
I see. Well, thanks, Joe, for that.
Thank you. I try to help.
You're welcome. As Bob says, as Theresa May speaks, the U.K. FTSE 100, the FTSE 100, Britain's stock market is down 1%, and stocks, STOXX Europe 600, largest 600 European corporation, is flat. Guess who shot themselves in the foot? Insularity is not the answer, and we will find that out as well, Bob from Grafton. Well, you know, Bob from Grafton, let me say that you may be right, but you may be wrong. Because because I think a lot of people have been astounded by how well the British economy is doing since the Brexit vote.
You mean it's not as bad as people thought?
Well,
the pound is down.
The pound is down.
Right.
Yeah, which will mean more people will go there.
Oh, tourism will be up.
Yeah. You know, stay at the Kensington Close Hotel. Where we stayed.
Oh, okay. I was looking for more
underwriting support.
And we stayed there a long, long time ago, and it was a heat wave going on in London. They don't have them that way. We're talking about 100 degrees or whatever it was, and they had the only salt water pool in London. And the kids swam until they announced that they were fixing the pool in the 100 degree weather. Okay, now somebody will write me and say, Alan, will you shut up?
Hurry.
All right. On that note, let's take a break. We'll be back and we'll continue our conversation after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. So, you know, I remember back during the campaign, there were a group of Republicans who were never Trump Republicans. And they were the group worried about national security, and they said, never Trump. And now, some of the biggest names in the Republican national security firmament, veterans of past GOP administrations who say, if called upon by President-elect Donald Trump, they stand ready to serve their country again. Here's the problem. Their phones aren't ringing. Their invitations to Trump Tower in New York have mostly gone, they haven't been sent, actually. And in Trump world, these establishment all-stars say they are persona non grata. Their transgression was signing one or both of two very public Never Trump letters during the campaign declaring they would not vote for Trump and calling his candidacy a danger to the nation. One letter with 122 names was published by War on the Rocks, a website devoted to national security commentary during the primary season in March. The other with 50 names, including some repeat signatories, was published by the New York Times during the general election campaign in August. Now, just days before Trump is sworn in as the nation's 45th president, these folks are saying, oh, we can help. We can help. We have ideas. Maybe you should do this. And they're not being asked because they said bad things.
One word commentary. Surprise! I mean, look, Mario Cuomo gets elected, a governor of New York back in the day, and the Republicans are just thrown out. You know, this is de rigueur. And you don't put your political enemies into office.
But these are Republicans.
Even in your own party, though. I mean, it was President Obama who reached out to his rival. to make her Secretary of State, you know. I mean, there is precedent. I guess Abraham Lincoln invite some of his rivals into his cabinet, and it was famously successful. You know, there is supposed to be some conciliation after the election where people put it behind them, and maybe that's what Trump was trying to signal when he invited Mitt Romney to the Trump Tower.
Well, people have this experience? That's the thing, though. You know, there's just a handful of people in the world that have this national security experience, and if you have that experience, no matter what you may have said in the past, that if you are willing to help to serve your country. Is that not?
No, I'm sorry. I'm Sicilian, and I understand revenge, and I know exactly what he's feeling. This is why he wants power, so that he can do this sort of thing. You have this great hope for a pivot, and he's going to act presidential and all gracious and big. We already know that's not going to happen. Do you remember his New Year's message? Yep. Happy New Year to everyone. My enemies who hate their life. So you're not going to see this. And the truth is that these men and women who signed that petition, will serve their country. And if Trump gets into trouble, they're still going to be there and help him out. But no, he's not going to give them jobs. He wants his loyalists in there. Name anybody that he's put on any of the positions that have been open to him that is an enemy.
And I get
that was even mildly critical.
And I get to use the word, one of my favorite words, which we see in academia a lot, contradistinction. And the big contradistinction here is between Obama, who is a guy who wanted to bring everybody together and made that clear, and Trump, whose character is completely different.
I just think it's the fact that we're sitting here in the year 2017 and talking about a blacklist where people are, because of a position that they held and because they express themselves, they are persona non grata like that, just universally like that. It brings back the Red Scare. It brings back the enemies list that Nixon had. It's not a happy time.
In 2016, we voted for a man who said, "Only I can help you." He does not believe he needs anybody else.
I know more than the generals.
We voted for that. Yeah, I know more than the generals.
And Mike, that is why you have been nominated for being the world's nicest man for the last, 10 years in a row. You know, and
I got to say something mean here. Let me think.
No. You know.
Oh, the show's young.
Just leave that to the
professionals. All I can say in response to Rosemary is and to Mike is you haven't seen nothing yet.
Yeah,
I think this is going to be the reign of terror if there ever was one.
I think if it is, it will generate a lot of opposition, and that might be the best thing that could happen.
The point of this report, though, and the reason I thought it was important to discuss, is that you have a president with virtually no experience in national security and foreign policy. The transition team seems to have little experience. The people that he has chosen for these very high-level jobs seem to have very little experience. So the people who have the experience are sitting on the outside just watching and kind of just jittering.
Whining and complaining.
Well, do you think it's whining and complaining or
yes,
that they really
they
are generally
concerned?
Yeah, they're concerned. Yes.
But we have an electorate that said phooey on experience. It's all the more experience you have, the more suspect you are. We want
different.
Getting
disruption.
Yeah.
That's exactly
we
it.
Want different. Yeah.
So draining the swamp is also draining it of experience and...
I believe that's what he actually meant when he said draining the swamp. He certainly isn't draining it of lobbyists or the big deal players in Washington, D.C., but he is draining it of people who have government experience, who have diplomatic experience, who have national security, environmental experience. They're all gone.
Yeah, that's a good point, but I think many of us, when we heard him talk about draining the swamp, thought he meant the guys from K Street, and I believe he did talk about lobbyists.
Oh yeah, and now having undue influence.
And now he is. And by the way, I have to apologize one more time. Vox Pop is at 2 o'clock, not 1 o'clock.
Oh, dear.
Joshua reminded me of that.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even catch that.
John Fazio.
I didn't catch that. Yeah. It's a good thing your listeners know you, know the station. They
know me.
Straight.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, they know everything. Better than him.
You have some articulate listeners.
And also some pretty profane ones. Wow.
Yeah, you got one. I got
you
one.
You got
of
an
those.
Astigram.
I got one of those the other day with the F word. First word was the F word.
So the letters that you're getting, not all of them are flattering?
Oh, well,
not
I,
all
I
of them. I would
that.
Say that, yeah.
I turned mine into the police and said, anything happens to me, talk to this
by
person
By the way,
first.
I did that. I did that with the anti-Semitic letter that I read here that day. I did send it to the police. And they said they had registered it as a issue. No, I think you have to do that, and it's not good. It's not good.
Mm-mm. It goes back to that issue of civil discourse, especially at a time when partisan divide is so deep and so profound. You have to express disagreement in a way that is still within the bounds.
Well, there's a theory that Trump's, the behavior and the alienation of people might actually force moderate Republicans to form a coalition with Democrats to try to come up with an alternative.
And, I'll tell you when that's going to happen.
When is that going to happen?
That's going to happen as his numbers go down and down and down.
Right.
He gets to 32%, and guys realize that in 2 years, they all have to run in the House, and they all have to run, and that about a third of them, I believe, have to run in the Senate. They're going to realize that, hey, if our wagon is hitched to this guy's horse, we're in trouble.
Well, there's an impetus to put in universal health care.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, Joe, what's the approval ratings for the president-elect?
40% in the Gallup poll today.
Yes, yeah. The Gallup poll
the
was
new
40.
One today.
Well, I saw also 39. Is that
some had him below
40? Yeah, we talked yesterday about how it's dropping. You know, he's at 37, but the new Gallup poll says 40, which is that same 40%.
And we know all the polls are right on.
Exactly. But it doesn't show a whole lot of variance from what we saw all through the primary.
What was Obama at this point going into his presidency?
In the 80s
something.
Yeah, 82. Yeah. And even George W. was in the 60s. And that was a pretty contested election as well.
Donald Trump will become president Friday with an approval rating of just 40%, according to a new CNN ORC poll, with the lowest of any recent president and 44 points below that of President Obama, the 44th president. During a tumultuous transition period, approval ratings for Trump's handling of the transition are more than 20 points below those of any of his three most recent predecessors. And as Rosemary mentioned, Obama took the oath in 2009 with an 84% approval rating. Even George W. Bush in a contested election took it with 61%
going
in office.
People want to support the new president, and they put politics aside at least for a while, and that doesn't look like it's happening.
Well, and there's differences in this election, even between this one and the George W. Bush one, which was also contested. He has himself tweeted and offended in other ways many people, which was unnecessary on his part. We didn't see George W. Bush doing that.
No, he was trying to be conciliatory while he was...
He gave one speech
George W. Bush.
And then the other thing is that the attacks against him, the level of hatred against him is much greater than under George W.
And this is true, but this poll was released by CNN at 7:49. And at 8:11 a.m., Donald Trump tweeted and said, "The same people who did the phony election polls and were so wrong are now doing approval rating polls. They are rigged just like before."
Wow.
Well, of course. That's what you say. Everything's rigged.
Does anyone think that somebody close to Trump is going to go in and wrestle away that smartphone?
I think they already had that opportunity.
Yeah. They are going to adapt to life with it there. That's what I predict.
And how can you convince a guy who is going to be president of the United States that his smartphone is a bad idea? You can't.
Well, you could if you were rational. They did with Obama. They took away his BlackBerry that he loved. Maybe he'll get that back. That would be nice.
Well, that was national security,
let's just say
right?
what it Correct. Is. They made a compelling case that he should hold off from this personal communication, and he trusted his advisors and dropped back a little bit.
But he wasn't as smart as Trump. You keep forgetting that.
I
smarter than the generals, you know?
Mm-hmm. Alan?
Paul says, from someone who spent 22 years in the healthcare world, the fact is that people receive care one way or another. We pay for it one way or another. The ACA was meant to create incentives to provide better outcomes at lower cost, and it was getting there, albeit slowly. Face it, Republicans just can't stand the thought that they're picking up the tab for someone else. But they were and are anyway. Interesting letter. And Barbara says, what happened to Trump's promise to eliminate the loopholes that enable billionaires such as himself to pay their fair share of income tax? If he and others had paid taxes for the past 19 years, would we possibly have to cover the dollars of health care insurance? Okay, dear Roundtable, the problem with saying that women's real concerns are contraception, not abortion, is that anti-abortion forces define many forms of birth control as abortion, regardless of whether they really were. Plan B, IUDs, many of them the easier-to-use hormonal birth control forms have all been considered abortion. The Supreme Court has not already permitted them to claim moral exemptions, whether or not the science behind their objections is true or not. The two issues cannot be separated politically. I read it, even though I believe this was the second.
Yeah, that's good. That's all true. And the IUD is responsible for this big drop that we've seen in the rate of abortion, according to the study that's out. And it's dropped even even in states where it's the restrictions that conservatives have gotten through on abortion were not in place. So conservatives are saying, see, we have less abortion because we've changed the rules. And the study does not hold that up. So abortion, however you feel about it, is the center point in the feminist drive. You have to be concerned as a feminist about how the government treats that.
Yep. Mark says, isn't it naive to take the position that our ideals concerning ethical labor and trade system can become realized when the individual nations are controlled by politicians who are funded by and under the influence of corporations? These trade agreements allow corporations to profit by abusing labor forces across the world. We have to have some agreements concerning trade, but they need to be those that protect the workers and the planet. Well, hold your breath for about 4 years.
Yeah, I'm sure by renegotiating, that's what Trump is going after. Wow.
Part of the deal.
Joseph says, good morning, panel. The Republicans, as usual, operating with blinders on. This time they refuse to see that keeping their promise to repeal is going to hurt their middle-class constituency. And their huge egos won't permit them to see any benefit to a plan originated by a black person. Well, actually, originated by a white governor in Massachusetts.
A Republican.
A Republican governor.
And
from Utah.
And Paul says, please consider Donald Trump is prepared to replace intelligence community and all of our current ambassadors with his operatives, a.k.a. ExxonMobil assets throughout the world. Exxon is in more capitals and has more influence than the CIA and others. Consider also that Trump released the dossier in order to disrepute the intelligence professionals. Paul.
Disrepute, good word.
Yes. Not as good as the word you used earlier. Which was it?
Contradistinction.
Contradistinction. Okay. We're going to take a break. Ray McGrath with news, and we'll be back with more discussion after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 17th of January. At 6 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock, do you know where your kids are? I don't know what that means. Good morning. Hey, Mike, can you tell us a story about what's happening in the Adirondacks?
Well, some of the older people in the room might remember driving up
that
the Adirondacks
us,
as a
ahead.
Kid and going to Frontier Town. You know, it's
oh, yeah.
Now when you go up the Northway on your way to Lake Placid or up to Canada, you go by exit 29 and you see what are basically a decaying ruins of what was once a really popular place. And it fell victim to the Adirondack Northway. You know, Route 9 used to be dotted with all kinds of little resorty things, and a lot of them didn't survive after the I-87 superhighway opened back in the mid-1960s. Because people just zoomed right past them on their blue highway. But now, the governor of New York is proposing taking that 85-acre site and turning it into a new gateway for the Adirondacks. It's perfect. I mean, it's right in the right spot. They would have, basically a tourism center where you could find out about all the great things in the Adirondacks. There'd be places to go horseback riding. They want to put a campground there. And there's going to be beer. According to this plan, the Paradox Brewery at Scroon Lake is planning to put a production facility there. And it's going to just be a wonderful thing for the local economy. Ray Moore, he's the town supervisor in North Hudson. He talked to our Rick Carlin, who has our story today in the timesheet, and says that it's everything they hoped for. You know, they really see this as a great complement to a lot of the other things that are going on. You know, the state has been buying up property from Finch Prine, old logging properties that have roads in them and have buildings in them and have beautiful lakes like the Boreas Pond area. And they're making them open to the public. And it really is becoming a resurgence of that area. And this conversion of the old frontier town into a tourism hub is getting a lot of support up there. And I think it's, what do you guys think? I think it's a pretty good idea.
Well, who are they putting in charge of the whole thing?
Oh, who are they putting in charge? I think that State Department. Oh, what's that?
Alan Kelly.
That's right. You are so smart. You're way ahead of me.
Yes. Well, this is not. This is horseback riding and camping is low tech. So this is the anti-poly technique. You know.
Well, except that they may have wood chipping there.
That's true. But you know, it is another side of our state economy. You know, we're looking to high tech to boost our upstate economy. But this is going back to our roots. And
I don't know. It's wonderful. It seems to me that the whole Cuomo thing now is day and night. He's doing all these wonderful things, as Rosemary said before about Trump. You know, she would become a fan. If he did healthcare, I must say I am so impressed with some of the things that the governor is doing these days that I'm really reconsidering my position.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, we have a listener, Joe, who writes really thoughtful letters. Not a Trump supporter, but he makes this effort beyond what I do to understand him, and he makes the point that we've had rude, gross, horrible presidents before, LBJ, Teddy Roosevelt, and they accomplished great things, and that's how you have to judge Trump, not by his tweets, not by just his hideous, unacceptable behavior, by what he actually does when he's in the Oval Office.
Well, okay, that's fair, but can I go back on that a little bit with you? Because, you know, he ran under a series of really crazy kinds of assertions that he said again and again and again. He lied. He was mean. He went after jailer, put her in the jail, and all the rest of this kind of stuff. I'm never going to be able to quite forgive him for that.
Well, I kind of agree. I've heard a couple of comparisons to LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, as being kind of gritty and using bad language and being tough and harsh. But you know what?
Stripping while he was talking to reporters, talking to them on the toilet. There's some evidence.
But that wasn't public.
You got to read. You got to read Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Oh, no, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know exactly. That she has spoken about that, and other women reporters.
In his pajamas. He
was spoken about that, where he basically changes clothes while giving an interview to a woman reporter, then hop in bed and pull the sheets over and kind of end the conversation. She'd be standing there in the bedroom and kind of walk out. But
I said to her once, how do you feel when he did that? He called you in with your pajamas on, his pajamas on. She said, nervous.
Yeah, nervous. but those are anecdotal stories that come out 20, 30, 40 years after he was president. When he was president, when he took over the presidency under the horrible circumstances of Kennedy's assassination, and when he ran for his full term with Hubert Humphrey as his vice president, it was a very united, positive message. He didn't attack people. He didn't have to attack Barry Goldwater. He had other people attack him.
Well, there was the ad.
Well, it wasn't him, though.
No, it was him. And by the way,
it wasn't him saying it.
No, but he had his surrogate say it, and it was really something.
Well, all I'm saying is his public image was far different than what we read about in memoirs years later.
That's true, and
it wasn't so obvious to people how crass his language was. Now we have the tapes where he spoke that way. But I think it's incorrect to compare him to Donald Trump, LBJ to Donald Trump. I think LBJ, in the public persona, had a lot of class. Donald Trump has yet to exhibit that class.
Well, he did.
Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. He did some very small things that helped him along, like Medicare, Medicaid,
Civil Rights Act.
Civil Rights Act. Yeah. Voting rights.
Anti-poverty programs. Yeah. You know, the war in poverty, and they did get great success. It's that one other problem he had. What was that other thing, Joe? Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah,
that's what done him in.
That kind of brought him down.
There was a wonderful thing on HBO the other, I think last night or the night before. Joe, you know all about this stuff. It was, I don't remember who produced it. It was made for television, and it was just a wonderful look into the Johnson administration and his relationship with ML King and
It was all the way with Bryan Cranston.
That's right. That's the one. It was great, just great.
Good stuff. All right, let's move on to other.
Wasn't he the Shadow?
That Bryan was Lamont Cranston. This is Bryan Cranston. He was.
he was a dentist on Seinfeld that later became a
Walter White on Breaking Bad.
I feel I'm playing. You know the Golden Age edition of Trivial Pursuit.
Well, you Golden Age edition. Nice. All right.
I'm sorry.
Don't make me laugh.
Blue call. Caused that.
President Obama to commute hundreds of federal drug sentences in final grants of clemency. Of course, this has been something that the president has done. Justice Department officials have completed their review of more than 16,000 clemency petitions filed by federal prisoners over the last 2 years and sent their last recommendations to President Obama, who is set to grant hundreds more to nonviolent offenders during his final days in office. Everyone has killed themselves here to give the final recommendations to the president, according to the Deputy Attorney General. In an interview, we were in overdrive. We were determined to live up to our commitment. It was 24/7 over the Christmas break. U.S. Pardon Attorney Robert Zausmer has not taken a day off since Yates brought him in on February 2016 to sift through the backlog of thousands of petitions, and those decisions obviously will be made just over the next few days. As President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take office, justice officials worry that his administration will dismantle Obama's clemency initiative, which had resulted in the early release of 1,176 drug offenders who were sentenced under the severe mandatory minimum laws passed in the 80s and 90s during the nation's war on drugs. More than 400 were serving life sentences. Yates said Obama will grant a significant number of commutations this week, but would not specify a number. Several people close to the process said it will be several hundred.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. This would just be tragic if the new Trump administration puts the brakes on this. I mean, this is maybe one of the very few areas where the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress actually agreed that thousands of Americans are in prisons wasting away because of some minor drug conviction back in the 80s or 90s.
Right.
This program was going through and very, very successfully vetting many of these prisoners who have had no problems with their behavior behind bars. Well, nowadays, I mean, you know, people are these laws. If someone gets arrested with a little marijuana, they're ticketed. It's an infraction. In some states, sure. It's not even against the law, like our neighboring state of Massachusetts now, to have a minor to have a small amount of marijuana. And people are in prison for this. Their lives have been completely
ruined.
Thrown away.
Did you
yes,
guys see?
And their families.
What's the name? Joe, you'll correct me because I don't ever remember the names of movies. But Roselle dragged me to a movie the other night, Moonlight.
Yeah.
And it was so depressing because basically, I don't know if anybody else has seen it here, but it basically laid it out. You know, your options are limited when you're brought up in a particular demographic. It's terrible.
It was during the war on drugs era, and it looked at a young man in three stages of his life as a child, then as a teenager, and then as an adult. I would say late 20s, early 30s, and how that affected him as he went on.
Wow.
Very thoughtful and a beautiful film, actually.
And won all kinds of prizes already.
I won the Golden Globe, so I'm sure we'll be nominated for the Oscar as well.
It would be a tragedy if this clemency program ends under a new attorney general that is less,
that hates black people?
But he said, Jeff Sessions allegedly said, it came out, he denies he said this, but he said, you know, the Ku Klux Klan isn't that bad, except I guess they smoke marijuana, so that makes them bad. You know?
He said he was just joking, and everybody knows that.
Yeah.
We're also experiencing the headline in the Berkshire Eagle this morning was that my friend Richie Neal, who is the congressman, is going to the inauguration, and now there's this growing list of congresspeople who are feeling that they should say, "I'm not going."
If you decide not to go, is that an assertion that you don't believe that the president is legitimate?
Well, some of them have been saying that. That's basically what John Lewis said.
John Lewis said that.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And others are saying things like it, mm-hmm. or just speaking with their feet.
Well, here's my question. He has raised a record amount privately to pay for inauguration activities. Far in excess. In fact, he's raised
You're
more than
about
Obama
Trump now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
than Obama spent for his two inaugurations.
Sure.
And yet, it's a very scaled down affair. There's a short parade. There's fewer balls than we've seen in the past. What's he spending the money on?
Well, maybe he'll go to charity.
Or maybe not. Or maybe not. Nevertheless, this is going to be. I'm fascinated with something. I think Rosemary said earlier that she can't watch television
can't
watch television anymore. I would love to know what those CNN numbers are like. because everybody. What did you say?
I can watch television.
You mean the CNN
like
ratings?
Big
ratings.
Bang Theory is fine. It's news programs I can't watch.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah, that's
you know
the
because
news stuff.
People just ignore what they don't like, and we know that because we know that who watches Fox, and we know who doesn't watch Fox. We know who loves this show, although we try to keep it balanced, but it's very hard. Why is everybody laughing?
Well, you are frequently accused of not having a
balance. Well, accusation doesn't mean it's right. It just means some person.
Let me ask this question about I was watching news last night, and there was a fact that came over that
do you ever sleep?
That I did not know. Would I sound like this if I slept? So I had I did not know this, but John Lewis did not go to George W. Bush's inauguration either, saying that he felt he could not go in good conscience because he was an illegitimate president.
Well, Donald Trump did not attend.
See, I did not
know that.
I did not know that.
And
it does, doesn't
it? It
puts perspective.
I mean, now obviously
he's a serial non-attender.
He wasted his shots.
Yeah. I mean, Brian Wolf.
You got to remember, Donald Trump did not go to President Obama's inauguration. At the time, he was questioning his legitimacy, saying that he wasn't born in the U.S. So, you know, it goes around.
And then it comes around.
Yes.
All right.
The Reporters Committee, by the way, is warning journalists who are covering the event to be very careful that they're expecting attacks on journalists. That's scary.
From the people attending the the inauguration.
Yes.
Dear good folks, Obama was initially prohibited from using BlackBerry for national security issues. Why won't Trump have his Twitter taken away, too? Who takes away something from the president?
Mr. President, Mr. Obama.
Well, I don't know. I do remember, and I have to look into this, but there was a whole story about how they had to make the...
They convinced him to give it up.
But there was a concern, a national security concern...
That it could be hacked.
Right, that it could be hacked. So
was more secure than anything.
Which our letter writer says it does pose a national security issue. His tweets have already created international concerns with NATO, China, Germany, and Mexico.
Yeah, but if you go into a secure computer... And
is there such a thing?
Well, that's a very good question.
If you put the server in your basement. Not to bring up old news.
Okay, Mika says, what's truly ironic is that the late infamous Roy Cohn is bookended by the late Senator Joseph McCarthy and President-elect Trump. With McCarthy, Cohn ruined thousands of lives by claiming they were connected to communist Russia. Today, Cohn's protege, client, Trump, honors the Russian autocrat Putin while abusing patriotic American institutions and citizens. What all three of these characters share are dangerous, power-hungry personalities. Well, Roy Cohn, of course, is dead.
Yes,
we all know that.
Yes.
And I remember that. And I remember very well, here's something that my liberal constituents and friends aren't going to like. I remember Roy Cohn was on one side of McCarthy. Do you all remember who was on the other side?
Robert F. Kennedy.
That's right. Robert F. Kennedy. Yeah. That's correct. Okay. Michael Burke says, what about the secret plan to defeat ISIS that Donald Trump mentioned so much during the campaign? Will the press call him out on this, or will you get a pass? We have such short memories. And this is from Mike in Rexford. And Deborah says, contraceptive devices and medications are not always prescribed for contraception. They're also used to treat many medical issues involving the reproductive organs. To deny these treatments is to deny women health care.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Keith says, Romney's health plan was first proposed by the Heritage Foundation in the 90s. The Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank. Obamacare had its start as a conservative idea, from Keith. Good morning, all, says Carolyn. I think a psychiatrist would make an excellent addition to the panel because he or she could describe the commonly observed behaviors of a narcissist. They don't have to describe anyone in particular, nor would you all. We can connect the dots ourselves.
Psychiatrist is a good idea. He could help us all.
Well, thank you for that.
Just get the medical definition of a narcissist.
Paul says, dear panel, I find it fascinating and illuminating that amid the preoccupation with Russia, there is no discussion of Trump's looming military confrontation with China. Well, it was on the BBC this morning. I did mention it in my commentary at 7:45 this morning. And so much and so much and so on. Okay. No, I always love it when people say just there is no mention. There is no mention.
Okay, that is frustrating. You never cover this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You, well, how did you find out about it?
That's right.
Ask
Jessica says, hi, panel.
Hi.
As one of my friends stated, the reason Trump got rid of the people with experience is because he fits a dictator persona. He only wants people who won't threaten him. He wants loyalty and followers. Okay. And Trippy says,
narcissist?
Trippy says, I like that, Trippy. It's a nice, and signed a trip. Good morning, panel. In regards to Trump not placing anyone who was even mildly critical into important positions on his staff, I was surprised to come across a clip last night of Kellyanne Conway being quite critical of him during the campaign before she was hired. She was referring to how he built his businesses on the backs of the little guy and talking about the victims of Trump University. I was amazed at what I saw, amazed that this woman, who was so aware of his sleaziness and calling him out on national television, is now one of his closest confidants and advisors. They're both disgusting. And that's from Tripp.
All right.
You send him and I read him.
We'll end there. And thank you very much for being with us. Alan, Rosemary, Mike, thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow with another panel, and the roundtable will continue after this break.